Hey there, Coach. Coach Will Love here. We have a great episode for you, but before we start, I wanted to let you know that the Idaho Basketball Coaching Podcast now has a newsletter. The newsletter has a bunch of great resources, including drills and concepts that I use with my program. It also includes write-ups to help you become a better coach. To subscribe to the newsletter, go to coachingidaho.substack.com. There, you'll also find an archive of past newsletters. Thanks for listening, and let's start talking some basketball. We are fortunate to have Liam Jefferson on this episode. Jefferson is a head coach with the London Lions Boys Academy. Prior to that, he spent 12 years as an assistant and a head coach at Loughborough University. Jefferson was also an assistant coach on Great Britain's U20 staff last summer, and apparently his shoe game was just awesome from what I read. Liam, thanks for talking some basketball with us today. How's everything in London?
Yeah, pleasure to be joining you, Will. Thanks for having me on. Everything here is good. We're a couple of months away from the end of our season, and things are ticking along quite nicely.
So I reached out before this happened, but last Friday I was at a sports bar in Sandpoint, Idaho, and on one of the TVs was the London Lions game. And then after that, they had the whole BBL post-game show wrap up and stuff like that. But I wanted to get a sense from you. What's the current state of basketball in Great Britain?
I mean, it's a very, very good question. And, it's one where I think it's at a bit of a crossroads. And I think British basketball tends to be at a bit of a crossroads whenever you seem to get a touch point with it, right? And as soon as you decide on your route, then it gets to another one. So the professional game in this country is probably the strongest that it's been for 20, 25 years now, with, as you were just saying, the British Basketball League having multiple opportunities to promote itself and televise their coverage across North America and the rest of the world. Our senior national teams and junior national teams are probably in a little bit of a state of flux. And it's one of those where we really feel like here in Great Britain, we're an untapped market and it's just ready to explode. But some of the decision-making, I think, at the top is holding us back a little bit at the moment. So there's some really good pockets of things happening in British hoops. And then there's some where we've still got a little bit of work to be able to do. But you would have seen, hopefully from watching that stream at your sports bar, the Lions this year have been doing really, really well. They obviously in the Euro Cup made the semi-final, and our women's team actually won the Euro Cup final. So actually starting to now make a little bit of noise and put British hoops on the map as well.
And then you're kind of involved in this growth because it's the London Lions that have created this youth academy, right? To kind of develop the game, develop some professional players that are London-based or England-based. So, well, let's go back real quick because you were really, really successful where you were at. So at Loughborough. So like what played a role in your decision to go ahead and take this position with the London Lions and try something new that doesn't happen in the basketball side very often in England?
Yeah, it's a kind of culmination of a few things. So there's some professional ones and some personal ones. So personally, my partner, she lives down in London. She's a coach too, and we've never had the opportunity to be able to live together. So personally, that was a huge driver for me. But like you said, I'd spent 12 really successful seasons at Loughborough University. I was fortunate enough to work with some really good coaches and coach some really high level players while I was there. And we won a bunch too. But the role that I had there was always part-time. And I think that's something that coaches, as you know full well yourself, doing this on your lunch hour at work almost, that for coaches, we have to find a way to be able to do the profession we love and balance a day job to make that work. And for 12 years, I did that as both a volunteer and as a part-time employee at Loughborough. And so coming to London professionally for me was the first time I was able to go all in on the coaching profession and really cut my teeth as a full-time professional coach. And then the kind of follow-up to that is, as you've kind of alluded to, the vision that we had here for Lions Academy and what we want to achieve is something that hasn't really been done before. And I know you've had Alex Sarama on the pod previously and spoke a little bit at length around what that looks like and why we're trying to achieve that. But the vision that both Alex had and then Vanya, who's the GM on the women's side, but also has responsibility for the academy, was to do something that was completely different. And for me as a coach and where I've kind of developed over the years, that just kind of like, it really sparked something for me. So it was a culmination of all these factors where it just seemed to be right time, right place, right opportunity. And so I was grateful for the time that I spent at Loughborough, but it was time to jump into something new. And to be honest, I'm 8, 9 months in now, and there's not a regret, because what we're doing here is really fun and really special.
For the listeners, can you kind of give us a sense of what the purpose of this academy is?
Yeah, so I guess it also comes back to your earlier question on what British basketball looks like at the moment and where we are. I think in order for us to have success on an international scale, both as London Lions in European competition, but also developing the growth of our league and the level and caliber of our senior national teams, we have to improve the pathway that's leading to that point. And at the moment, you only have to look at our senior men's team to see the British guys on the roster, in inverted air marks, are Americans and Canadians that have British passports. And actually, it's the guys that are 11, 12, 13, 14 on the roster that are your true Brits. And while some of the other teams in the league, that's not as much of an issue for them, for us to be able to compete on the European level, we need higher level players, right? And so the vision for us is, what can we do differently? How can we go about exploring this in a slightly different way from what's been done already in the junior pathway? And that's not to knock the junior pathway in this country, because there's some really good pockets of work that happen at academies up and down the country, but it hasn't historically churned out high-level elite players. We've only seen a couple that are now starting to reach the NBA and EuroLeague level in the last 3 or 4 years. So actually, we wanted to just explore, is there a way that we can do this differently that makes it easier for our senior teams? And the kind of byproduct of that, hopefully, is that we then bring up other academies and other institutions across the country to be at the same sort of level by being inquisitive around what we're doing and how we're doing it.
Right. And so correct me if I'm wrong, but the big team, the London Lions, they're limited on how many Americans they can have, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's always a number of import players and then European players. And then you need your, I guess, homegrown players. But by homegrown, it just means that they have to have a British passport. So that's where at the moment, a lot of those guys are dual national, where they're US citizens that were perhaps born in the UK and then moved pretty early, or similarly born in the UK and moved to America and they identify as American now. So for us, I think, one, we wanted to be able to achieve that. And there, for me, having been an outsider from London to now coming to London, there isn't such a hotbed of talent as there is in London. Just the pool of player that we have available to us historically has been super athletic, able to get out in transition, just disruptive, a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. But the problem has been the basketball IQ, the ability to be able to execute. And that's something that we're hoping to try and, I guess, not rectify, but have a positive impact on within the London community and then the wider UK community as well.
All right. So let's talk a little bit specifically about what you're doing in the academy. And so, I mean, basically you're using a complete ecological approach, and that's why Alex was hired to come in and do that. And so he's been a guest on here several times. And so people probably have an understanding of his thought in regard to development. So what are two or three takeaways you've had so far, you said, in kind of your 8 or 9 months now that you've been using this system?
Yeah, so we, like you said, we have Alex as our director of methodology. So he has pretty much oversight of the direction of what we're trying to achieve with the academy, with all of us as coaches having a say and an input into that. And I think, for me personally, it wasn't a massive diversion from what I was doing at Loughborough in the first place. I think the way that I've described it to Alex when we've been talking is I was game-based using constraints, but not quite knowing how and why I was using them in certain situations. But for me, since I've been able to come in and work a little bit more closely with him and start to really get to grips with an ecological approach and using the CLA, I think my biggest takeaways are just the speed with which players are learning it. We're putting all of our players from under 12s up to, at the moment, U16, and next year we'll have our first U18 team, into situations that are just so representative, but that we're able to manipulate and constrain and help guide, that the speed with which they're learning at it has been a real, like, wow, I've been a little bit taken aback by that. So that's been awesome to see. And I think when we've had other coaches come in and observe our practices, and even our assistant GM from our men's team was like, just the IQ that these players now have and the level that they're executing at and their ability to recognize coverages and coverage solutions and then verbalize that to teammates, some pro players really struggle with. So I think that's been a huge piece for me. I think a byproduct of it is that the players, as I'm sure you know, absolutely love practice because we are just competing all the time. And that doesn't mean that we're at high octane practice every single day, because the kids would just be absolutely exhausted, right? So again, we control the practice intensity and the environment that we have, but they love it because they're getting to play the game. And within that, they're seeing how much growth they have. And then the last thing for me is just, I guess, how intentional it all is. And as a staff, as a coaching staff of four, we're very much aligned. We work towards the methodology and the kind of, I guess, terminology that almost becomes our Bible for our principles of play. And we're extremely intentional with what we're doing in practice, why we're doing it, and how we're choosing to get to the point that we want to get to. And so for me, I've really enjoyed this year, like, sinking my teeth into an ecological approach and adapting my own coaching practice. And I think it's something that once you really do start to understand it and get to grips with it, it's hard then to be able to coach in any other way, and to go back to 5-on-0 or shell drill in the half court. And it's been a lot of fun for me.
All right, cool. And so we've got a couple of questions coming up that I think will kind of hit on this, but in regard to kind of how the coaching staff has been working together. I mean, what are meetings like? How are you guys discussing this? How are you creating this?
Yeah, great question. So we get together at least twice a week for workshops. Within those workshops, we'll set a direction and an agenda that it may be something that's CPD based. So what do we want to look at that we want to develop in right now? And maybe Alex will lead, or I'll lead, or one of the other coaches will lead. And then the other times, especially in the early season, we just did a lot of just brainstorming, where we're all in the same room with an empty whiteboard and we've got our outlines of our principles of play, but we're all chipping into what that looks like. I've probably lost count of the amount of dinners or coffees that me and Alex have had where we're coming up with different terminology that to an outsider might sound like a completely different language, but really helps us, again, to be intentional in our practices. And I'm conscious that not everybody is fortunate enough to be a full-time coach and not able to be able to have a couple of meetings a week. But even the conversations that we have where it's 20 minutes pre-practice and we get all of the coaches together to be able to pick on a topic that actually, like, okay, we're looking at how do we tag up on the offensive glass? How do we send all five to the offensive glass? And that's something that runs throughout all of our teams. And actually, a couple of our age groups are struggling. Well, what have you been doing in practice that we could then look at manipulating something similar to our under 16 group or our under 14 girls group? And those conversations have been really, really rich this year. And like I said, Alex has helped to guide some of that. But I think as the year has gone on, our coaches have started to take more and more responsibility in those meetings that's made them really purposeful.
And this can be for you, or maybe just something that you've noticed in talking with the other coaches, but what have been some aspects that maybe have been a little bit harder to implement, or maybe didn't work the way that you thought that they were going to work?
Great one. I think you definitely have to be comfortable with the learning process. And oftentimes, as coaches, if you're adopting the CLA and it's something that's new to you, you're used to jumping in and giving the answer. And actually seeing someone struggle and holding yourself back from not stepping in to say, no, you should do it this way. And actually thinking about, you know what, how could I manipulate the constraints, or how could I have a quick 20-second interaction with this player as they're subbing out to help guide them to the point that they want to get to, rather than stopping them and saying, hey, no, you should do it this way. Because utilizing the CLA, and especially a conceptual style of play like we do as well, it almost goes against everything that we're trying to do. We want these athletes, these players, to be able to make decisions for themselves, to understand the environment that they're trying to navigate. And so I think early on, for some of our younger coaches that have come in, that was quite a challenge. Was everything that I've seen in the past is I should be the loudest in the room. I should be stopping and controlling and directing. And I think just being comfortable with the learning process is sometimes really ugly, and you have to be okay with that. Was probably a little bit of an adjustment. Like, if it takes longer than you planned on it doing, it has to take longer, and you find a different creative way to be able to do it. And then the other bit for me is just knowing that not everything is going to work. So, especially again with the CLA, you might throw a couple of constraints in that you've sat at home planning your practice and gone, you know what, these are going to be great. And then the moment you put them on the floor, they completely flop and you have to change direction. And again, if you're a coach that's early in your journey with the CLA, that can be a challenge. And you can actually be like, you know what, I'm going to go back to the old way. But actually, that's part of the process with becoming a much better coach as well. And I would say this year, my development as a coach utilizing the approach that we have has been like tenfold.
Yeah, I would say that once we started going to this, this actually sparked life into my coaching. I enjoyed it a whole lot more than saying, okay, what are the same drills that we're going to run over and over and over again? Instead, being out there and having to actively coach and figure out solutions on the fly is a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I think it becomes, I joke about it being like, if you understand the theory and the science behind it, then you can turn it into art. And that's really what it does become, is like, once you get to grips with the science and the theory behind the CLA, then there's no limits on how creative you can get with your coaching and your practice environment. So actually now all of a sudden we're doing stuff that's 1-on-2 and then 2-on-4, and then all of a sudden we're back into 5-on-5, and it just allows you to express so much more as a coach. And I've actually found that I have such a deeper understanding because of it as well. Because one, I'm observing much more and utilizing these constraints, but also the players are giving me so much more information because of the situations that they're in, that I'm learning from them just as much, even when they're 15, 16 years of age.
For sure, for sure. So here, can you kind of take us through a typical week for your players? Because I think one of the things that we have to identify is that here, like the ultimate goal is for them to become professional basketball players, right?
Yeah, so I think we're in year one of what's a 2 or 3 year project for us. So right now, as I kind of alluded to and touched on before, we have U12, U14, and U16 age groups with both boys and girls. Next year, we'll also introduce a U18 age group, as well as an academy, like your traditional academy setup, that's 16 to 19, so equivalent to your last few years of high school. This year, we've practiced a minimum with our under 12s of 3 times a week, and then with our under 16s of 5 times a week. But we've also had to share some of those players with their club teams. So what we didn't do this year was enter ourselves as a club team, because we wanted to be able to collaborate with local teams. What we've kind of learned through that process is next year we're going to have to enter a club competition, because actually, utilizing the CLA, players have to be in our environment all the time to really reap the benefits of it. So it's looked a little different this year, but yeah, across all of our age groups, I'd say there's an average of 4 practices a week and a game every couple of weeks. We've been really fortunate this year because of the support from our ownership to be able to take the players to international tournaments. So rather than playing weekly games, we've gone onto the continent and competed against some of the best club and junior teams across Europe. So each of our age groups has been into Europe at least twice, if not three times, and competed at various different competitions. And we've had varying different success because of that. Whereas next year, when we actually have that 16 to 19 team, that's when it becomes really serious for these kids. So you're talking about 3 to 4 on-court team practices a week, 2 to 3 individual skill development sessions, maybe one session in the weight room, plus a game a week. And they're going to be doing all of that on top of their school schedule. So it like once, and that's why we wanted 12s to 16s this year, is to have a year to embed everybody into the process before those that are 16 now move into that next step. But that's where I think we will really start to see everything just go to a next level.
And is this pretty similar to what they kid would go through if they're going the football path?
Football path is a little bit different. So it probably looks similar up until about 15, 16. And then you would typically sign your scholarship papers with the football club or the soccer club for, I guess, everybody that's listening. Well, and they would typically at that point usually drop out of school. So they actually have a much harder route back into education if they don't make it. Whereas the basketball academies in this country, all of them are attached to an academic establishment as well, that they still have that. But I think there's also then different forms of life between the two sports. There's potential for you to make tens, if not hundreds of millions within football. Whereas in basketball in the UK right now, we're not at that point yet. So there's elements of it that look similar, but then there's also elements that are completely different.
So can you take us through how you've been planning practices this year and explain what we would see if we were there at just a typical practice?
Yeah, so we would, I say, probably spend 45 minutes to an hour planning every practice that we have in the academy. And again, that's just coming back to that point about us being really intentional with what it is that we're trying to achieve. Again, I think there's a lot of opportunity for us as coaches to be able to express our creativity and to help bring out some of what it is that we're trying to achieve with the task design that we're doing. But I think where some of our practice planning has really separated itself is as an academy, and in those meetings that we get together as a staff, we identify for each of our age groups what their rate limiters are. So I know Alex would have mentioned some of that terminology on the pod in the past when he's been on, but it's essentially a factor that is affecting a player's ability to express a skill. So we'll identify these rate limiters, and for each age group, when we're planning the practice, we're intentional in looking at, okay, what is this age group struggling with and how can we help to get them to that point? What do we need to touch on? What can we manipulate in this environment? Then once I guess you walk into a practice, you're going to get a very similar feel across all age groups. And part of that is down to our principles of play and having consistent principles of play throughout every single age group. So you'll hear the same terminology. You'll see coaches utilizing the CLA in the same way. But I think the one thing that would probably take people aback is just the speed with which we're working at, utilizing the CLA and the environment that we have, and that practices are very nonlinear. So we're not going, you know what, and I know we're going to talk a little bit about pick and roll, but we're not teaching you the pick and roll 1-on-2 or 2-on-1, then we're going to build it to 3-on-3, and then we're going to build it to 4-on-4, and then we might build it to 5-on-5. Actually, we're going to be bouncing around. Maybe we look at pick and roll for 10 minutes in a 5-on-5 setting, but the next drill that we do is actually a 2-on-1 finishing drill. And then it's another 40 minutes before we come back to the pick and roll, just because for us, that forces the players in that environment to actually look at this environment and be like, you know what, this represents the game. Like, I don't get the opportunity to go pick and roll 10 different times and figure out what is the defensive coverage. Like, I have to bounce around a little bit. And I think you would see a lot of that within our practice. I'd also say it's an extremely encouraging and safe environment. And the players have really been empowered to have a voice, but also to be able to fail. And you're not going to be chewed out or put on the baseline and told to run a suicide if you miss a layup in transition. Actually, We're going to talk to them about, okay, why did that happen? What can we do to help that? And I think teammates are great with that as well. So I've really enjoyed building that environment this year in practice. And like I said at the very start, I think one of the byproducts of everything that we've done is that players just have so much fun when they're with us and able to learn too, that we've probably got the balance on that with how much challenge and stretch there is, but also how much support there is too. Because I think oftentimes when people start to, or at least get inquisitive about the CLA and the environment that we might have here, it's like, well, it all sounds fun, but actually how much are you holding these kids accountable, and how much are they getting better in this environment? And I think we really do get the balance of that quite nicely. And part of it is down to the relationships that we build with the players, and being able to have such a strong relationship with them allows us to be able to do that. And yeah, so I think you would see a lot of those different common threads throughout practice.
So how are you working with different players to help them in their own personal development? You kind of talked about, okay, what is this group struggling with? But then how are you kind of breaking that down to the individual players?
Yeah, so again, we have individual player development plans for every single kid that's in our academy, and they will get reviewed at least 3 times throughout the year. And those player development plans kind of align with some of the rate limiters that we were just talking about for each of the teams. So maybe our U14 team is struggling with gets, so the pass and essentially pitch and get back. But actually, player X, he's okay with that, but he's struggling with the coverage solution when the defense shoots the gap and takes away the opportunity for the gap, for the get, sorry. So in those player development plans, we have each player's strengths, their building blocks, so areas that they can continue to build on to make them even stronger, and then areas for development that they want to search for what we call future greatness. And we'll identify at least 2 within those 3 areas for each of our athletes. We'll then have a section that is basically a summary of how we see them fitting into our Lions style of play. So we'll categorize players as, and we can come back to some of this if you want to, but as targets, pickers, and converters. So the targets will typically have the ball in their hand, and they're the players that we're entrusting to create dominoes. The pickers do what they say on the tin. They're creating advantage through picks for us. And then our converters are maximizing dominoes and the ones that are converting at the end. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't be multiple roles, but not everybody's going to be a target and have the ball in their hands, because not everybody can deal with the pressure of that situation. And so we'll list some of that within each individual player development plan as well, so that we know how do they fit into our style of play. And then utilizing all of that, we have a list of recommended small-sided games for that individual athlete that will help them to take the next step that we've identified in that plan. So let's say we're looking at areas for development and it is that get. So we would then have a couple of small-sided games that we would list that every coach then has access to, so they know when they're working with that player, this is what we're working with player X for the next 6 to 8 weeks. And so then any practice where they have an opportunity to have them in perhaps a small group for a skill session, they can look to utilize that. Maybe within one of the small-sided games, now that I know that, I can add an individual constraint just for that player that isn't relevant to the rest of the group. But do you know what? If you make the right decision on that coverage solution and you get a score out of it, it's going to be an immediate win for your team. That, again, creates such a different environment when that kid knows that they all of a sudden have got that coverage solution and they get what we call as a gold medal finish. So at the rim is a gold medal finish. When they've got that, they've won it for their team. And all of a sudden, both they've had development, but everybody in the gym is celebrating the fact that they found this kind of common solution. And our player development plans really help us to be able to do that. So that then, like I said, stitches itself into the practice planning and what we're doing, so that one, we're helping the teams, as we said, but then hopefully each individual player is getting something out of our environment in the same way.
So a couple points I want to make off that, or maybe follow up with, is one, well, Alex is the director of methodology. He's working closely with the coaches of the 2 big clubs, right? To identify, this is our style and we need to develop kids so that they can come eventually come up and play this style. Is that right?
So we're hoping to get to that point. So right now, Alex's role as director of methodology is oversight over everything that we're doing with the academy. What we've not quite like tapped into yet is how we align that with everything that the senior teams are doing. Because if you were to look at both our men's and women's, they are considerably different in style of play and just what you would typically say is a Lions brand of basketball. But I think the difference with what we've got within the academy playing in a conceptual style with the principles of play that we have is players are being developed to be able to take that step no matter what system and style those senior teams are playing. And that also means that because at the moment we have 140 kids in our academy from U12 to U16. Even when we hit U18, maybe 10 of those, if we're really, really lucky, get a shot at even practicing with the senior teams. So the other 120, 130 kids that we've got within the pathway right now, we still need them to be able to go and drop into any other environment. And just because at 18, 19, when you leave our pathway, you may not be good enough for the Lions men's team or the Lions women's team, you might be good enough for the team in Leicester or the team in Scotland or the team in Manchester. And so, again, our style of play and the principles that we have means that you would still be able to go and slot into that environment, and you've not been completely conditioned as a Lions player and then struggling in any other environment. And I think once we get that link with the senior teams, we'll be in an even stronger position. But I think we're in a really, really good spot with the work that we're doing right now anyway.
And then the second question was just kind of identifying the roles for the players. Like here, you know, it's basically in a lot of developmental situations, it's like, okay, taller kids, you're going to play here, you know, medium kids, you're going to play here. And then smaller kids, you're going to get the ball. I mean, how do you kind of approach it within the academy?
That's a great one. I could talk about this one for about 20 minutes. So we have those roles and they're very specific when we're in game. So we would be quite intentional with, do you know what? There's only two or three players on the team in a game that are targets and that can play in the pick and roll and that can trigger dominoes for us through our concepts and our triggers. And then in practice, we're looking at how can we constrain each of the small-sided games to get everybody an opportunity to almost show and prove that they could also do that role. And so we've got some kids that at the moment, you know what, they're just pickers, but they might be 5'10". But actually, we're looking at when you're in the pick, let's look at ghosting the pick instead of rolling it every time. And we'll look at clearing out and popping the cut so that you have the opportunity to catch, play off the rip, or you can look to catch and shoot. We have a kid at the moment who's 15 years old. He's 6'6", and we have him handling the ball and playing as a target. Because in the smaller sided games that we've done, he's been in that situation. And we were like, holy cow, like this kid's coming off the pick and roll. And because he's so much bigger than everybody else, his ability to playmake and make the pass, nobody's ever put him in that situation before. And so we're able to explore that within the environment that we've created. But it doesn't mean that then when the game comes around, or even when we're in, so we'll have teaching, learning, and competing drills in practice and small-sided games. So the Mike McKay model in our practices. Even in the competing drills, it's very clear if you're a target, you're a converter, or you're a picker, same as it would be in a game, because that is then really replicating what the game would look like. So again, it just comes down to that intentionality. But I think the ability for us to put kids in different situations has really led to, one, some surprises, but also, I think, just things that we've been able to really run with. So the kid that's 6'6", I'm really high on, I think, the potential that he has. Because all of a sudden he's gone from someone that you said typically would be pigeonholed as being, you're a screen and roll guy, or we're always putting you on the rim and you're only scoring off dump offs on penetration when the help rotates, to now he's handling it in transition and he's calling for picks and he's playmaking and he's going to get 3, if not 4 years in our academy doing that. That where could he be at 19 if he ends up at 6'8", 6'9"? And for us, that's really exciting.
So let's focus a little bit on teaching a concept or a trigger. And so you shared some film of some small-sided games where you guys were teaching decision-making in the pick and roll. So can you take us through the process? You kind of hit on a little bit, but like, how are you going through this process of identifying, okay, this is what you need to be looking for. These are the decisions you're going to need to make in that situation.
Yeah, so a lot of that came from when we were playing out the pick and roll, especially 4-on-4, 5-on-5. We found that players weren't becoming attuned to the affordances for different coverage solutions. So they may be playing against a switch and actually not seeing the opportunity to hit what is called the messy pass, or what we call the relay pass. So the quick pass ahead and then hit into the roller. Or they're not seeing the opportunity for the pocket pass on a quick slip because they're holding and setting that pick for a little bit too long. So we looked at creating, along with Alex and the work that he did in college in the past, some small-sided games that can help to really put them in representative situations, but where they're getting a lot of reps without repetition. So it's not like they're just playing the same possession over and over and over again until they get it perfect. So one of them, for example, that I shared with you on video is what we call wall pick and roll. So we play it 2-on-2, and we constrain the space that the players have available to them so they cannot play past the opposite lane line. And sometimes we'll put cones down to be able to display that. So there's a visual cue. That would be typically where your help defender and your shrink defender might be. So taking away the space for you to be able to play with it. Then we would constrain the defense to be in, okay, you're only allowed to switch. And we could potentially also look at, I think I did in the clip I sent to you, teach the defense too at the same time. So as we're raising the level of the defense, it's also raising the level of our offense on every single possession. And we're fortunate enough to be able to do that because we usually have two coaches at practice. So we can also share some of the responsibility around that. But we'll also add perhaps a single opportunity constraint. So now we're playing 2-on-2 with this wall pick and roll, and the defense is switching. And you know what? You don't get to a good picking angle, or maybe you hold your pick for too long and you don't slip to be able to create dominoes and what we want as the advantage. Well, that's an immediate turnover. And you would just be amazed as to how quickly the players adjust to the constraints and the rules that you're putting into their environment to manipulate it, that's what I think is why that learning happens so quickly. So within that practice, I know I only sent you the wall pick and roll against the switching, but we were able to look at two different coverages. So we looked at how we punish the drop coverage and how we punish the switch. Each of those coverages, we looked at three different coverage solutions and the defense with probably five or six constraints. And neither of those small-sided games lasted for longer than 15, 16 minutes. We're just able to move to so much more because of it. And then the other one that I think I shared with you as well is then three-on-three pick and roll bursts. And I would say that's the closest we get to repetition. So we would split teams into three teams, one on offense, one on defense, one waiting to come in. And the offensive team gets to stay for four possessions. The defense will change every time, so they both play two times against that team. And again, we'll introduce different constraints. But in that one, we could then really explore the opportunity for that messy pass. So in the side pick and roll, as that pick and roll comes, the ball handler is using it, and they're looking for a quick hit ahead, quickly into the roller on either a seal or for a finish, and for what, again, we call a gold medal finish at the rim. And that one we're looking at, okay, so it's a game to 11, twos and threes. But if you score two of those relay passes, the messy passes, it's an immediate win for your team because we're then attuning their attention and their intention to executing that within the small-sided game. We're not saying you must do this every single time because, well, what if the defense shoots the gap on that pass? Now I have to make a decision to back cut. And the guy that was the roller, he's got to make a decision to space out and play out of it. So we would never, in any of those small-sided games, be like, okay, it's got to be this, 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 and this, because this is what we're looking for every single time. So yeah, hopefully I probably went around in a few different directions there,
No,
but
it's
hopefully
perfect. Yeah.
thanks to the question.
No, and so, here I think what's noticeable, and I'll include a couple of clips in my newsletter, but here when you get in there, it's pretty quick that you're discussing stuff. So, I mean, talk about your method in regard to suggesting change or things to think about.
Yeah, I think it's partly something that I've adapted and got a lot better with, and we've exchanged a couple of messages on it. It's oftentimes something that coaches are trying always to be more purposeful and intentional with their feedback. I think one big principle for us in any academy practice is that we want to make sure that we're maximizing time on task. So the players need to be in it as much as possible. So my role as the coach is, anytime that I do feel like I need to intervene, I'm doing it with purpose, and I'm doing it as succinctly and efficiently as I can do to get them to the next thing. And that's where, coming back to that, the Mike McKay piece on the TLC. So is the small-sided game a teaching, a learning, or a competing drill? Helps me to be able to do that as a coach. I know if it's a teaching one, I'm probably going to be speaking to them a little bit more. If it's a learning one, I'm only picking my opportunities maybe between every 3 or 4 reps to be able to intervene. And if it's a competing one, I'm holding back, because that's the game-like situation. So the couple that I sent to you were much more learning small-sided games. But when I jump in, it's because I've noticed something, and I will probably manipulate a constraint quite quickly and then get back out again. There'll also be quite a lot of questioning with our players, and the longer pauses that we have, they're still no longer than, I would say, 30 seconds, will be an intentional question to guide the players to the answer, because oftentimes they have all the answers. It's my role not to give them to them, but to help to get them to that point. And I think you'd also see that a lot in some of those small-sided games as well.
All right, so the second thing I think coaches maybe struggle with in regards to kind of taking the CLA approach, going to a conceptual offense, is just that transition from practice to implementation in the games, in regard to, you know, sometimes it can look really, really bad in a game situation. So can you kind of tell us some things that you guys do to get that, to create that bridge, so that the things that you're working on can be a little more fluid in the games?
Yeah, I think it comes down to how representative you're making that practice environment. That really is the bridge to it. And it's sometimes recognizing that, do you know what? Maybe we've just got to, rather than going up and down, we're going to constrain this to 3 or 4 trips to make it really purposeful. So we might have a scripted start in the half court for something that we're trying to achieve. And then you're playing up, back, stop, and we're resetting again. And that makes it much more game-like, but we'll be intentional with what's the purpose, what's the constraint, what's the scoring system that we're looking to really try and accentuate something within that. I think the other bit is, it comes back to my earlier point about one of the things some of our coaches struggled with at the start, and me to a certain extent, is it's just being comfortable with that mess sometimes in game. And actually, my reminder to the players comes with our terminology and that language that we talked about, and having that shared language to be able to pull someone aside and say, you know what, in our next huddle, I want you to talk about how we're playing in yellow. So yellow for us is when we recognize the defense is neutral and we need to trigger and try and create dominoes again. Me just pulling them over that the next time they have free throws and huddles, they have that opportunity to be able to do that. Our terminology helps us do that, and then that will fix that mess in game. But you do have to be comfortable with just stepping back from it and allowing the mess to happen. Ultimately, we're talking about youth sports, right? If we were talking about at the pro level or even the university level where I was before, it would probably look and feel a little bit different. But at the youth level, we want to make them make these mistakes. We want them to learn from these mistakes. We want them to be able to evolve in the environment that we're putting them in. So, yeah, I've probably diverted off on a little bit on that question, but that's one way that we would go about looking at it.
No, that's perfect. And I really appreciate your time. I just got a couple more questions. And so to kind of tie into that, so what are you looking for in game film, and how is that kind of guiding your approach as you get into that next week of practice?
Yeah, great one. Again, I think just because of how I described what our season looks like and those trips into Europe that we have, how we utilize video is probably slightly different, and we're quite fortunate as well. So whenever we travel into Europe for tournaments, it would look a lot more like an AAU tournament where we're playing four or five games over 3 days. So we would typically go into those tournaments with three very clear intentions on the offensive and defensive end. And that then helps to shape what we're looking at in that film review and that video review. So after the first game, we might identify a few things. And then the video that we would look at for the next 4 days of that tournament, but then the 2 or 3 weeks following would all be focused only on those intentions that we've highlighted. Because again, I think it also helps with some of that development at that age, 15, 16 years old. Us throwing everything at you just isn't going to help. We don't scout at all for any of the games that we play. So there's nothing within the video that we're ever looking for that's not on us. But then once we get into the rest of the year, we have every single practice filmed. And whilst that might sound like it's like, whoa, that's I do it on an iPhone that's got no SIM card in it, on a tripod that I bought from Amazon for £15. And that's how I film every single practice to ensure that once we've then got those games out of the way and we have a new topic or I'm introducing something new in practice, I'm making a subsequent learning video that I share to all of the players that goes alongside that. So again, like everything that we're doing is just super intentional. And I think that's where we're looking for those intentions in game when we're around the game phase, but then we're also looking for them in the practice environment and what it is that we're teaching as another tool to be able to reinforce what we're doing on the floor. And those videos, we utilize XPS. So those videos are sent out and shared via XPS. The players get them direct to their phone. They can watch them at their own convenience. They're no longer than 90 to 120 seconds long. They will have one topic because nobody's attention span lasts longer than that these days anyway. They'll have one topic within them that they're able to review, and then they'll get another one later in the week, and they get a couple more the week after, and a couple more the week after. And that's how we're at the moment utilizing video in our environment.
I like it. Yeah. One of the game changers for us, I think, was when we started really focusing on recording practices, videoing practices, and then not just for the kids' sake, but for my sake, so I can go back and take a look and see what went well, what didn't work well, and stuff like that.
It's huge. It's huge. And especially with the CLA as well, there is some times where I've walked out of a practice and I've been like, oh man, that one was tough. Like, I just don't feel like they got where I wanted them to. Some of the small sided games that I created, they just weren't working. And then you go back and you watch the practice video and you see so many different affordances present themselves that you were trying to create that you just didn't see in the moment. That you're like, do you know what? Like, what was I talking about? It was great. Like, it was that mess, but everybody got something out of it. We managed to achieve the two things that we were looking at. And I think the sooner I got to filming and utilizing video in my own practice for my own coaching, let alone for what we're trying to do for the players, it just took me to another level as well. So I can completely vouch for that one too.
All right. Well, I could spend a lot more time talking to you, and we will in the future, but I just wanted to ask you about some areas that you are focusing on in your own personal development as a coach.
Yeah, it's a good one. I'm starting to dive a little bit more into the theory for the CLA. So I say I have a working knowledge of it and I can put it into practice, but I really want to be able to just continue to understand how I can better my learning environment, how I can better my own coaching practice, and what more can I do within that. So this isn't a plug, but Alex's book coming out is timely because that's my homework at the moment that I can dive into. But then I'm also now starting as well. So my aspirations are to coach at the professional level in the not too distant future. So I'm starting to really be purposeful with projects on certain teams and deep diving into teams and what they do and why they do it and trying to understand different countries' philosophies and styles and what they do, different teams and different programs. So one that I'm diving into at the moment is Paris basketball, who are probably one of my favorite teams to watch. They were a big competitor for London, so I have to be careful how much I say about going to watch them play. But I'm deep diving into them, and they play a little bit conceptual, but there's also an element of the NBA in there, and individual and one-on-one, and there's just some really unique aspects that they bring. So I'm trying to look at as many different teams and programs as I can do, so that hopefully one day when an opportunity comes for me to be able to take that step up to the pro level, I've got a video library and a backlog of all this experience and understanding of different teams and different programs and different styles.
Well, Liam, I really appreciate your time. This has been a lot of fun, and I just want to wish you best of luck with the rest of this season and in your future.
Will, I appreciate it. Again, thank you so much for having me on. I'd love to do it again, so would always come back whenever you ask. But yeah, same to you. Hope everything that side is all good, and let's catch up soon.
We will.